This is Dialogue Conspiracy. Political research specialist Mae Bressel, whose conspiracy newsletter appears in the Realist magazine, has for 3 years shared with our listeners the fruits of her decades' research into political assassinations and the abuses of power in America. Her weekly commentary relates the news of the week to the evidence emerging about the conspiracy, which allegedly maintains its power by force over America's electoral and executive processes. And now, here's Mae.
Good afternoon on Dialogue Conspiracy. This is the week that was, as they say. I remember the week that John Kennedy was assassinated. There was a British broadcasting program that said this is the week that was, and they played a very beautiful commemorative show for John Kennedy. And I think of this week of the news, the Nixon tapes becoming public, the SLA escapades in San Francisco that are as important in American history as the Kennedy assassination, making tremendous social changes backwards if we allow these people to get away with it. And the arrest of the Zebra, that massive arrest of 100 men coming in and taking 7 men in San Francisco, and 4 of them were released for no reason to arrest at all. This huge overkill taking place up there as part of this race war, and so much coming in the news in 1 week, it's almost difficult to comprehend. One of these events alone would take 10 years of work to do, and they're all coming in at one time. And it's hard to summarize, and I'm going to have a few remarks on a couple of passages of those tapes today. But I have a guest today from New York City, a good friend. I consider her a close friend of mine. Flo Kennedy is in Carmel with us. She came out to be here this weekend, and she's going to do a show with me this week on pertinent subjects taking place on the American scene. And Flo?
Hi. You're so modest, you won't tell that we all came down from San Francisco to give you 2 awards. You got the Feminist Humanitarian Award that was given to you by a coalition of women from the Bay Area, and then you got the National Feminist Party Media Workshop Award, and we gave it to you because in 3 weeks you told us more about Watergate than the whole 2 years almost later, and multi-million-dollar investigations, quote-unquote, no one of which turned up as much as you did in 3 weeks. And so it's certainly fitting that on this occasion we should have an opportunity to see how far down we've sunk, because those 26 volumes, you brought it to my attention that they came out precisely 26 volumes. What symbolism! Isn't it incredible?
Well, the symbolism of Richard Nixon taking what's the equivalent of a city telephone directory and presenting it to the nation, and while the courts are saying we want the tapes, he had planned for a month to have these things bound. And what the first thing I thought, because I've lived with him so closely with those 26 volumes, and of course Leon Jaworski of the prosecution of the Watergate was a very much a part of the cover-up of the John Kennedy assassination. We have the whole top team of the Kennedy era in power in Washington, you know, Nixon's attorney Jenner.
And don't forget Connally.
But Nixon's attorney Jenner, Albert Jenner, who's on the impeachment committee,
was also
a member of the Warren Commission.
I call the Warren Commission the chocolate factory that chocolate coated the manure of the Kennedy assassination.
Oh, it was terrible.
But there was more manure than there was chocolate, so they had to put the balance of it in the archives because they ran out of chocolate.
Well, I figured, you know, this picture of President Nixon this week holding those 26 volumes, you couldn't count them on the screen, but later the paper this week had a picture of them, the front section of the World, the San Francisco Chronicle, and I had this visual image that he is saying, because you know I say the government's run by blackmail or bullets, the main thing. So that what he was saying was, you have lied in the Kennedy era 10 years ago, and I'm not doing anything different than you, and here's my truth. You have your truth and I have mine. So I sat down and took a pencil and numbered the volumes because it looked
sure
like my
enough.
Library. And sure enough, one volume, like volume 20,
only
has about 3 pages.
Oh, yes.
14 has 2 pages. He made it symbolic. There's a lot in the symbolism of this.
There's no question about it.
He says this is the whole truth. And there's about as much truth in those volumes as there was in the Warren Report.
Of course. And of course, this had far-reaching effects. But what really got me and why we brought you the awards was that had the article in Paul Krasner's Realist been taken seriously by the AP and the UPI, and if they had not pulled that caper nonsense, then conceivably and almost certainly we would have had a president other than this one, which wouldn't have been a hell of a great thing, but at least we wouldn't have had to spend all the multi-millions of dollars and the multi-millions of hours that the Irvin Committee and all the rest of these uncovering cover-ups, you know, have spent, yielding less information than your article in The Realist yielded 3 weeks after the Watergate break-in.
Well, one of the things you see, the media can't claim ignorance because we had a press conference in Los Angeles, the Associated Press, the United Press, and I said, here, Richard Nixon was involved in the Watergate, so was Robert Mardian, so was Patrick Gray, John Mitchell, and this denial that it didn't happen is costing millions and millions of dollars, and they still haven't gotten to the truth of the Watergate Hotel. Sam Dash doesn't, he said it isn't important what they were doing there. It makes a bit of importance what they were doing there. You can't bring a government to a standstill just getting some papers of Larry O'Brien.
And the point is that they've still not raised the question that I think needs to be raised about whether or not there ever was a landslide. Because it's my opinion that one of the reasons the Committee to Re-elect the President never shared money with the National Republican Committee as all other presidential candidates did was because they spent the money. Do you remember that reference in the tapes to the $350,000 for polling?
Uh-huh.
What is that about if it couldn't involve the question of simply stealing the election? You can put it in better terms than that, but that's what it amounts to. And even if it is not actually the case, it certainly is an area for some investigative journalism, as they keep talking about.
Investigative journalism, they not only had a secret fund, like the Committee to Re-elect the President, which was separate from the Republican Party, but then Patrick O'Brien's brother had a separate fund in Maryland with Jeb Magruder that went to the White House, and Haldeman had a $350,000 fund in his desk from Herbert Kalmbach and Segretti, which was the Dirty Tricks Department, which goes through the government. But Haldeman had another separate fund, separate from all of that, and that went into the Wallace shooting. That went into the Mary Jo Kopechne. These are the funds. They don't want to know where they went, because there you find Tony Laskowitz. There was a tape this week that came out about how are we going to cover the Wallace thing, and they talked about the Haldeman money, and they said, we have Tony down there. That's Tony Laskowitz from the Dirty Trick Department.
But when they needed the $350,000, or when they were talking about getting the $1 million for Hunt, you remember he said, I don't remember now who had it, but someone had $350,000 for the polling.
Yes, that's right.
And that, what would you be needing that kind of money for polling for, unless you were going to stack the polls? Because you see, the Committee to Re-elect the President, CREEP, as I always call it, had a completely separate operation in every precinct. When I go to Iowa or Bowling Green, Ohio, or just the tiniest town in America, they had separate poll watchers watching, no doubt. And when you see that and you couple that with the fact that never has there been an election of even a popular president where you had 49 states going in one direction and only one going in the other. But there are newer things that are coming up now. What about the chicken fiasco and massacre?
We can go into the poison chicken. We're buying the right of the president, if it finally gets the impeachment, to not be impeached. That poison chicken deal came out in the newspaper this last week. It was the Chicago Sun had the article in the Washington Post, dated April 19th, and it goes into the fact of 22 million chickens that were poisoned, and the farmers could claim their insurance from whoever sold fertilizer or whatever it was, but they don't intend to. I believe this was purposely poisoned, and then between $8 and $10 million is going to 5 chicken growers. And there was a question brought up even in the newspaper that Nixon is buying off his own impeachment, because by giving these men the money, the senators that raised the money for the farm growers, their constituents are so happy that this five men are gonna get $2 million each of our tax money.
And of course the children in Detroit and Chicago that were supposed to get those for their school lunches will not get the chicken. They'll probably get paste or something.
No, but what happened is that they did get poisoned chicken before they caught the poison.
Oh, well, obviously. Well, we know from California that Ronald Reagan, when he was talking about giving the food out in the Hearst situation, referred to giving them botulism. Yes. So food poisoning of the oppressed community is nothing brand new.
But a massive scale like this, where you can give cancer-inducing drugs it's going on, but to buy your own impeachment time through the Senate and even have it put in the establishment press, you know, is not a rumor, but a real fear, that he's passing out millions of dollars. This is unmarked money, you know, millions of dollars, but this time the taxpayers to pay it, so that these five men are sure of the vote and then their constituents get $10 million.
And then right on our own doorstep, you see what seems to some people to be a total flip-flop, where the so-called earlier, at least I thought of the Bay Area as rather a progressive, for America, progressively racist area, and now it's come to be almost like Nazi land.
Well, you see, you had to do that. The Bay Area was McGovern. You know, California is a strange contrast, and you had the birth of the Black Panther Party, the free speech movement, you had the artists, and the hippie movement, the Haight-Ashbury, where the children were leaving their establishment homes and realizing the hypocrisy. So that's, if you want to get a runner out of the field, you don't pull his fingernail, you kick him in the ankle and break
his
leg.
Precisely.
So the people where the ideas are coming from, where the most freedom in accepting racial differences and nationalities, the city where the Chinese and Japanese, the Italian and Blacks seem to all melt in, and the youth and the old seem, it's a very free and beautiful city. That's where you hit it, because if you hit them out, then the vocal progression, you know, the rock bands were there, and Janis Joplin, and the whole music scene, Jefferson Airplanes and all, you knock that city out and turn it to a reign of terror, and then you can do the rest of the United States easily.
Obviously, but you see, that's why it's so important that the article that Stephanie Caruana did about with you, the interview, should have gotten out the way it did. And I know it was a great financial sacrifice for you and Stephanie, because you could have gotten a tremendous amount of money for an article of that nature. Instead, you put it into the Berkeley Barb, and now, do you know, there were no Barbs within two or three days. It just wiped out, and I understand, or I hope anyway, that they are talking about doing a special reprint of that article, because that article is almost, you know, out of existence,
yeah.
And people are just crying and begging for
it. Well, incidentally, if the people are listening and want the, it's called, is SinQ, the SLA SinQ, the next first Black Lee Harvey Oswald, the Thunderbird, here in Carmel has them now. They're selling them. And if people listen to the show out of state.
The last one. Oh, no.
No, they had a pile there.
Oh,
if
good.
Someone out of state, they can write to KLRB Carmel and send 50 cents. That covers the article, the postage.
I think you better repeat that, because up in San Francisco,
oh,
they don't even know.
KLRB, May Brussel, KLRB Carmel, California. And ask for the Berkeley Barb article on the SLA and send 50 cents. And I'll send you the article, and that covers the postage in the article. Or the Thunderbird bookstore has them now in Carmel, the Berkeley Barb. A lot of people ask me in town. I think it's a good article to explain where the SLA is leading and how it's going into racism and genocide and what these people
and
are
And I
up
think
to.
Before we get away from it, because you really play tricks on me, I'd like you to bring over the awards and let me read what we said on them. We also gave an award to Paul Krasner, the publisher. Let's read the square one first and get them ready for the swinging one. Okay, it's the first one from the a coordinated group of women in the Bay Area, and was presented recently to Mae Brussel by Ona Solon of the Bay Area Association of Household Technicians. That's the domestic workers. It's called a Feminist Humanitarian Award to Mae Brussel with our thanks for her devotion to her sisters and brothers of the human race, and it's dated May 1974, Carmel, California. Feminist Party Media Workshop Award is to Mae Brussel for seeing and recognizing the shit before it hit the fan, and for reporting it in August 1972, Realist, what multi-million-dollar government and media wise monkey investigations have admitted but failed to extend. By that, it's a little weird language, but by that we simply mean to say that 3 weeks after the Watergate break-in, she gave us all the information which hasn't really been added to by all these so-called uncoverings. And it's a little ironic that Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein got $55,000 for their book on the Watergate when your stuff was out almost a year before, and I'm glad they got it,
yeah.
And $450,000 for Robert Redford. So I think maybe another thing we need to do is to get your stuff more available, and maybe you and Stephanie will write a film script on Murderville, USA. How is Murderville, USA coming?
Well, on? There's so many murders I can't get behind the volumes. I'm doing mostly radio work and doing articles, because to get a book down while you're teaching a university class and a radio show. And
I saw your files last night. I can't believe it.
Well, you know, talk about things that are in print in The Realist. We can talk about a specific matter, and then maybe people can follow and write to congressmen and follow this up. You know, the article on the tapes this week, there was a subject of raising the hush money.
Oh, yes.
And they said, can you get $1 million? And the president said, you can get it in cash. I know where it can be gotten. And the question is, who the hell will handle it? And they talk about Tom Pappas from Greece, who could give them the cash.
Donald Nixon had gotten
$6 million. In the Realist article, the first one where I had the press conference,
right,
we talked about Tom Pappas funding this money, this secret money.
Yes,
that
was
used
in your Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped?
Then there was
in August 72 of the Realist, right?
August 72 right. of the Realist. Then there was a question here that many listeners may have missed. But as you get your Watergate tapes in print, look this up. They said, you don't need $1 million right away, but you need $1 million. Is that right? And Dean said, that's right. And the president said, you need it in cash, don't you? I'm thinking out loud here for a moment. Would you put that through the Cuban committee? Dean said, no. Is it going to be checks, cash, money? How will it, if it comes out, are you going to handle it? Is the Cuban committee an obstruction of justice if they want to help? And Dean answered, well, they have the priests. And the president said, would that give it a little bit of a cover?
That's right.
So the president knows who the priests are, right?
Obviously.
They're
obviously
having a conversation. So should we talk about who the priests are? Because at my college class last week, I talked about the priests. If you get the second article I did that's also at the Thunderbird Bookstore, or you could write to KLRB, on page 22 of The Realist, I talk about William Sullivan, Division 5 of the FBI. And he is the most important liaison of the past political assassinations. And the
Don't
FBI,
forget
the governor.
The deleted part right after that.
Oh, yeah. Then, oh, yes, we'll go into William Sullivan. But here is a section, page 22. It said, the American Council of Christian Churches, shortly before LBJ
died. Now, this is
died,
your article.
This is my article in The Realist, page 22. Said, shortly before Johnson died, he revealed a curiosity that caused him to find that the real assassins of President Kennedy came from the Caribbean, called Murder Incorporated, a series of church fronts funded as a school for assassins in Oaxaca, Mexico, dressed as missionaries. Now, these men are dressed as priests. The same church people interested in such activities have direct contacts to important White House aides.
So
here's Dean this week talking with Nixon about their priests. And I had this last July of 73 in The Realist. It says they have contacts with the FBI, the CIA. Agency money, now listen to this, is sent to churches who pass it to persons they never met and will never meet. The money hires assassins.
And so these, obviously, and your very next item, your very next item is about the
Cuban
exile
community. Yes, the Cuban exile community. Because a man sat on the bus going to Mexico with Oswald by the name of John Howard Bowen, whose alias was Albert Osborne, and he worked with the Cuban committee and with William Sullivan of the FBI and the White House, and they dressed as priests. The man ran a missionary school down in Mexico, and they sent out assassins for Guatemala, Nicaragua, Jordan, Middle East. You know, when Kennedy died, they said, this isn't a domestic assassination. We're not a banana republic. And the same priests were shooting down there that were paid in Washington.
And
we were buying the banana weapons.
Of course.
See? Now, here's the name of some churches, Flo, that I won't. Here's a woman's name in Virginia. Now, this is volume 25 of the Warren Commission hearings. I spent years on this, so this is why I could write the article. Here's a woman from Virginia, page 55 of volume 25. Her name is Mrs. Fraley. You can read it up, so I'll read it. Mrs. Virginia Fraley. She met Mr. Bowen 20 years ago. This is an affidavit she signed. She wasn't a witness. She's not seen him until a year and a half ago. She's known him 19 and a half years. Some deacon in Knoxville, Tennessee, in September 62, gave him enough money for a mission for 3 years. But it's not sponsored by the Baptist Church. They were dressed as Catholic priests. They're doing missionary work on their own. A Mrs. White in Pikesville, Tennessee, said that she recalled the missionary in Mexico. She sends $35 a month weekly. She never met Bowen. That's the man that sat with Oswald. She's never seen him, only contacts him in the mail. She knows nothing about his background. She gives aid and assistance to any needy person who does the work of the Lord.
Oh, wow.
Now, these are the priests.
Oh,
is that heavy?
Oh,
now,
sad.
Here's George. Do the work of the Lord. Now, these people, I have a list of people that have been sending money down to these churches. Now, this is a CIA front. The federal government sends money down to various churches through
and
California,
as usual,
Virginia.
The poor people fund it. As usual, the taxpayers and the consumer groups and the church.
No, they're a conduit of money.
No, no,
yeah.
I know, but I'm just saying that, as usual, the little people, some of them possibly sincere,
oh,
that think they're, you know, really contributing to a church.
Oh, yeah.
Although nobody with taste and brains would do that.
Oh, that, well, you see, I think that the very richest people keep track of their money. So I can't believe that these people from Oregon, Washington, Virginia, Tennessee are just voluntarily sending between $35 and a couple hundred a month to a missionary
it's
they just never met.
It's a washing machine.
It's a washing machine.
So clean up the money.
That's right. So they dress as priests and they go down there. So the Realist article mentions the Murder Incorporated as being missionary churchmen. So when the White House tapes came out this week, there you have the president saying, Dean says, well, they have the priest to cover it. And the president says, would that give a little bit of a cover? And he says, that would give some for the Cubans and possibly Hunt, and then you've got Liddy. So the president knows about the priest because he doesn't say what priest.
Oh, no, he's very au courant with that part of it.
So
but you see, the other end of the spectrum is the Nazis in San Francisco and in the Bay Area. You see, because one thing that the establishment do that we, unfortunately, I don't know who we are, but I assume anti-establishmentarians don't do, is to cover each end, you see.
Yeah.
They have the priests and they have the Nazis. So when the school or any other situation gets totally out of hand and the police can't quite deal with it, then they either send, whether it's Wallace's, well, when Wallace's campaign got out of hand, when the school situation got out of hand, this recent Yvonne Golden episode was one of the things that helped to make them even more visible, then either the priests or the Nazis are available to
them. Oh, wait a minute. I got a better one for you than that, Flo. They can be both, because the same John Howard Bowen, alias Albert Osborne, that sat on the bus with Oswald that ran the School of Priests, was arrested in 1942 for being a Nazi in Tennessee.
Oh, wow.
And for burning the American flag.
We've come full circle.
He's both a Nazi and a priest.
Oh, boy.
And
oh.
He's never an ordained minister, but they wear the collar.
Of course. Why
and they're not? Funded by the Central Intelligence Agency, the taxpayers.
They're Nazis in drag, in other words.
Well, they're Nazis at their campsite, and they're priests in Mexico.
Of course.
And they travel as the men of the church.
And they use whatever cover they happen to want.
They have three ways. They can be Nazi and priest or Nazi.
That's right.
But they're all the same. The FBI knows these people. If I have all these records on them, they can certainly begin to figure this out, unless they're funding them, which they are.
But you see, the peculiar thing is that the Nazis killed 6 million people, and they've turned up in the Bay Area, and no one seems afraid of Nazis. But purportedly, and we don't actually, I have never seen a body of a white person killed by a black man, but I'll stipulate that it's happened. But 12 white people are supposed to have been killed by black people, and they have a zebra fright up there that it is bordering on psychosis. And what I can't understand is, how is it that there's never enough evidence to make some people believe that Nixon is guilty, but there's never so little evidence that they won't believe that a black person is guilty of anything from grinding white people up as hamburger and serving it to each other or whatever, you see. And it's that kind of pathology that you're dealing with here, because you see, we don't get any radiation at all from the Nazi situation. No one seems to believe, not even Jews seem to be the least bit scared that the Nazis might repeat what they did in Nazi Germany. But they're prepared to put the whole black community
blacks killed 12 whites.
In a position of responsibility, searching cards issued, South African
opening
methods,
doors.
Breaking down doors, holding people in jail. And did you see what they did to the Muslim headquarters of those people?
It's terrible.
Gail Christian did a story on NBC that showed the damage and destruction of this little pitiful place that the Muslims had, and they dragged, and then of course they sent four of them back because they didn't have sufficient evidence, but made very certain to announce that if they should get a little bit of evidence, they know they only need about a teaspoonful, whereas they got to have a mountain range of evidence for Nixon, or people are still making excuses.
I know. Well, you know, there's another thing in the White House memo this week which was very interesting, because it goes along with this thing. When the president and John Dean are having a talk about how to cover up in the Oval Office, March 13th, 1973. And they're saying, in reference to the allegiance of FBI former official William Sullivan, and this is what Dean says, if I have one liability in Sullivan here, it is his knowledge of the earlier
unintelligible boy
blank that occurred here.
Want to guess
here.
What that's all
well,
about?
Well, William Sullivan was not only, according to news memos, on the secret police force of the White House, you know, that Intertel, co-Intertel program, but when he was asked about
FBI
if he approved of it.
Assistant director, wow.
Yeah, he was the assistant director of the FBI. When they asked him if he approved of this domestic program, He said, I approve of it 1,001%, and I was responsible for it.
Oh, boy.
And in my article in The Realist, I said that he was behind the political assassinations of Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and John Kennedy. And 10 years later, he bragged, how can you be 1,001%? And he claims responsibility. And he claims that he even took things from J. Edgar Hoover's desk and did things over his head. And at the time of the Watergate arrest, William Sullivan had taken from Hoover's desk things that John Mitchell and Nixon information that would have kept them from being president, and they were in John Ehrlichman's desk. If the media had listened to what I said, we wouldn't have an election because all of this information was available. How can you elect a man in who has things in his secretary's desk that prove that he isn't fit to be president?
Obviously. And what is this dialogue about whether you need a crime for impeachment? Whether you need it or not, you've got about 2 dozen.
Well, just stealing from the J. Edgar Hoover and putting
it
in your own desk.
Well, obstructing justice and accessory after the fact and perjuring at least 100 times, but say 20, and harboring criminals, withholding evidence, obstructing justice through misleading evidence, failing to respond to a subpoena.
Well, there's a list of 57
fraud.
Impeachment charges.
Oh,
did you know
please.
That?
And don't forget that had they responded appropriately to your material in 1972, that's very nearly 2 years, just 6 weeks or so before it'll be 2 years, they would not have had certain key people like Chotiner dead.
Oh.
And, there have been about 5 deaths of people that really should have been questioned immediately in 1972.
You know, the way I concluded my article, this was July 72, there were two paragraphs or sentences that I think are important, because I wrote this, it'll be 2 years ago in two
That's
months.
Right.
I said, and I talked about Alger Hiss, because he's talking about his name on the tapes. I said, high summit meetings, a false sense of euphoria preceding elections does not conceal increased budgets for weaponry, new laws of repression, or further concentration of power in the White House. The family of humanity is not represented by the strategists who are few in number, still holding on to their power. Secret organizations such as the Lincoln Club, formed in 63, continue to finance and dictate to Richard Nixon that groups should be carefully examined. Nixon's kind of power over other people's lives is elusive and vanishes rapidly at the proper moment. The human family, and that's why I like your humanist award, the human family has new weapons in the war against secrecy. Information is power, speed of communications is power, ability is power, sheer numbers of intelligence and concerned citizens become power, and facts are power.
And I noticed in your mail this morning, when you've got such a tremendous amount of mail from Seattle, you know, when I traveled up there in connection with the schools, and I hear you're going to be hitting the campus trail, I find that there are groups in every state that are prepared to go after these senators so that they will not feel free to be so sure they're going to let Nixon off. And I think it would be very interesting, whenever possible, for instance, when you go to Seattle or when you go to a certain state where the senator is shaky, where he's getting a payoff, for instance, Scoop Jackson carried the ball for the
weapons.
Trident missile submarine, which is $13 billion, you see, and they are vetoing bills for daycare and food programs. So I think it's important that the people from those states begin to take positions that and make it known to their senators that they're going to dump them.
And become intelligible of their
that's
own life.
Right.
The
in
facts
words,
are out if they
that's
use
right.
them.
That's right. And that they don't just ask you what they can do, but they get on these senators
get
because
on
there are only 96 of them.
That's what
and
I
they've
say.
Got millions and millions of dollars.
Write letters,
we
call,
just have
talk
to
shows.
Let them know this is the end of the line for them. If
in other
they
words,
don't
you don't
vote for impeachment.
You don't appeal to the senator, you appeal to the people that take on talk shows, write
exactly.
letters, the editor. You know, Flo, you are a fighter. That article Stephanie did about you, the warrior.
Compared
the warrior.
To you, I'm a worm, honey.
No. We're all out there in the front trying to expose conditions that are wrong. We know they've always been wrong, but there's always a chance with the intelligence and know-how today to make them better, so that's no excuse anymore.
But you see, we have on our side at this moment the desperation. They have not time to clean up the shit and get it together. So the thing we need to do now, I think, is to really to crowd them. You see, Nixon is being crowded. These tapes, the release and publication of these tapes are a terrible error. There are a lot of very square and wonderful people who would never be anti-establishmentarian, but these tapes are shocking. And what I believe we can do now is to get larger cadres of people ready to require their senators to make commitments, and they expect this to run into September. So we have plenty of time, May, to get to the people all summer long on your show, on the campuses, through our mailing lists, which are very limited, with the articles that people like you and Stephanie Caruana are doing. And you see, the point is that because of their desperation, each state is going to have its own program of repression. The Zebra and the SLA scare has got people in a very nervous state of mind. But on the other hand, more and more young people are becoming anti-establishmentarian. And Patty Hearst is, I think, just the beginning. And I think there'll be an epidemic. You pointed out in the Berkeley Barb article how the kidnapping is a softening process to make people accept people's disappearance and vanishing. Mm-hmm. We have continually to let the people understand, and by talking to them this way, they will be more and more skeptical of the government. You see, we've yielded the right to violence to a racist, genocidal, militaristic, corrupt, assassination-prone society, yeah, and government.
One
and
bet what, on death, nothing but right. death and rhetoric.
And what we have to do now is to make people aware of that, so they'll begin to make their own connections, and they won't have to refer to people
and
like
of
you.
Of their own life forces. Well, you see, what I do, wherever I speak, I give out a bibliography of about 30 essential books, and people are buying these books, and they write, you saw the mail today, people ask for the bibliography, and I say, well, I'm not going to stand up here and tell you all I know. I'm not a sideshow. You're going to invest your own eyes, your own time and money, and get knowledge and information. Then you write letters and you take pressure and you say, look, this is what I know. What are you going to do about it?
Like, but I noticed from your mail that in addition to people who want you to tell them what to do, you get mail from people who are telling you what is happening.
Yes.
You see, it's on the army bases.
In the
question of the psychosurgery, and then people like Peter Bregan and Mary Lou Shields in Boston are beginning. So you see, the polka dots of the oppressed are running together too. And while we don't have the wherewithal to pull what they're pulling, since they're in the wrong, we don't need as much.
See, the one thing we have on our side, like as you say, they're in the wrong, is that if I had told somebody 3 years ago that you would see John Mitchell and Patrick Gray and Robert Marty and all these people out, or Agnew.
And Eagle Crow.
See, they break laws, and people say to me, are you afraid? You see, I don't break anything, and I don't steal anything, so I could just go forward, and I don't have to worry about who knows something on me. They all are in a position. If you hear those tapes,
and you see, the fact is now that they're is a certain amount of searching going on, even though it's there's as much cover-up as there's searching.
Exposure,
you
yeah.
see, certain people are beginning to attach their claim to progress on revealing these things.
You see, we give the lectures, they're paying money now to hear how corrupt other people
are. Exactly, but the prosecutors are beginning to see that you can make a big name for yourself, not just prosecuting little people, for prosecuting big people. And of course, your suggestion that people look into the jury that freed Stans and Mitchell is fine, but I don't even mind that so much, because what I find is people get so frustrated when they have the kind of evidence and see the kind of evidence they have on Stans and Mitchell and watch them get away, and then see how quickly and with what dispatch they can just pick up people, tear up their houses, break up their places, yeah. and their shops. Then they begin to get more and more angry. So as far as I'm concerned, they can't do right even when they do right, and they can't do yeah. wrong even when they do wrong, because we get them either way it goes.
Either way, you can't get upset that Mitchell and Stans got off, because when you think that John Mitchell was the most important lawyer in the country, the head of the Attorney General and New York lawyer, the prosecution can't afford to present evidence that he looks guilty, because then he comes back. He's not going to go to jail without talking about the president. They're double blackmailing each other, so you know they have to have a weak prosecution.
Did you know that Judge Gagliardi that handled that trial had held Joanne Chesimard's aunt, who was also her attorney, in contempt for refusing to go forward with their trial on about a week's notice? And that was how I got stuck defending Joanne Chesimard, when I never did criminal work ever in my whole career to any extent. And they were so desperate that they had me handling her trial when I was home at Christmas.
Well, you know, the trial of Hugo Bunnell out in Salinas, he had a well-known lawyer up in Northern California was going to take his case, and the lawyer was tied up on another case, and the judge says, we have to go to trial this week, and wouldn't give him another date, and gave him a public defender 2 days on a murder trial of killing a guard. And, you know, they rush those
things through. But you see, this is typical. But you see, now, one of the things I think that we should be aware of is that that the president is getting paid at the rate of $200,000 a year while he's fiddling and diddling around refusing evidence. On the other hand, they're saying we want Watergate behind us, and yet he's trying to stretch this so that you'll have the problem of a second Congress having to hear this evidence.
Well,
and the other thing I think that people should do, excuse me, just one second, is to force them to move ahead and say that we're going to have dump Senator X in our state if that trial doesn't begin EON standard. Because the idea of paying this pigocrat a salary, regardless if it was $2,000 a year, he should be off the payroll. And here he is holding up the investigation, demanding speed.
Of course, there's one good thing about that, Flo. As long as Nixon's in the White House, and I, in a way, kind of think he should be there the remaining
four years for this reason.
I spent 10 years going over the Warren Commission lies, and I know that Gerald Ford is so guilty of a cover-up, he's worse than any Ehrlichman, Haldeman, Dean, all rolled together. So what the kind of mentality and news media that the Pentagon pushes out would do this. If Nixon were out tomorrow, they'd say, now
they'd
that we
forgive
have
everybody.
Ford, let's give
him
a clean chance for American security. Let's not go into the past, because the past is the past. The past is the present, and you know the sugar you eat today is going to rot your teeth 10 years from now.
I appreciate that strategy, but my point is simply that they're going to do what they do either way. So your strategy says even if he stays in, it's good for us.
Because you see, the longer he's in, this is the point. If he's out, they say you can't whip a dead horse. Like they let Agnew out so fast, he had 40 charges against him, and they let him out with one. So I think you should take the position of letting Nixon in and keep whipping it up on
but
him.
But you see, the way I do it, I call it sort of a jujitsu. Whichever way their weight goes, mine goes with it. If he's out in a hurry, some of us can press. They're going to drag their feet anyway.
Yeah.
So some of us should press for him to be out because he has no business in there.
But some should,
other people should have pressed for him to stay in, so that either way they go, there would be a substantial contingent of people prepared to proceed on the outcome.
I'm afraid they'll lose their vigilance once they get a new house in there. That's why I would rather dangle it and bring everything out of there, because they'll lose their vigilance.
Well, they are taking care of that for you. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, their strategy is to drag their feet.
Yeah.
So our strategy can work in with theirs where it does, and can work against them where it does not. That's all I mean.
And call attention to these. Well, listen, our time is up. I really appreciate your coming to see us, and I'm sorry it's over so fast, but we'll be together I see we have more time. Do we have more time?
Do we really? Yeah, we got seven more minutes.
We got some more. Okay, then we'll talk.
Oh, great.
Here's my reason about keeping Nixon on. If Agnew were still vice president and you went into this long thing about him and you didn't let him out on a slap of the wrist, he's going out, Mr. Virtuous, writing these little phony little sexy books, or a form of a blackmail too, what he's writing there. He should stay in and have the 40 counts against him. If he did 40 illegal things, we should have heard all 40. Because now everybody says Agnew only did one thing and the media crucified him, and he got out on one little thing when he was not even the vice president, you know, in Maryland. And the point is, let the public know all the things they do, because then they couldn't come back later and say the media crucified Agnew. They could say he was out on 40 charges. Here they are. Now, if Nixon had resigned, like I have an article from Washington Post, New York Times, a list of 56 impeachable charges against Nixon, and one of them is the plumbers. Well, that pertains to all your secret murders, assassinations, tricky departments, so you know what the other 54 or 53 are. But if Nixon had resigned a month after the Watergate, we still wouldn't have had all of this.
Covered.
So the
but
longer
you see, they are working on your end of it. They are working to stall it. So my position is, I like to have a parenthetical strategy where you are rushing them and you're holding them back at the same time. Obviously, we are not going to determine whether he ends the term in the White House. The chances are that is his whole strategy. So you might have your way with his cooperation. My point is, for those people, and I know there are many of them who think, as I do, although I agree that, you know, the other strategy is a perfectly acceptable one, as I see it, we must teach politicians that they cannot string things out and have things their own way and determine what's going to be subpoenaed and so forth. So they are working on your end of it. See, they're working to delay it. So you'll probably have your way after all.
You're not only teaching politicians what we're doing, that they can't have their way because they're not going to have it anyway by being crooked and corrupt, but you're teaching men like Mr. Hearst, who writes an editorial in the paper, that the party he supported for 20 years was corrupt. And if we got him out so fast, Hearst wouldn't have had an opportunity to write an article.
That's true.
So he says, I really heard it's the most painful thing to say that the man I supported for 20 years, it turns out to be all these things. Well, if he'd gone on the streets of Haight-Ashbury and said to a perfectly beautiful child, look, you lovely person, why did you leave that mansion, that home with your washing machine, dryer, and the car your parents bought you and all that? Why'd you leave home? And they said, because I don't want this genocidal war, and the president is doing illegal bombing, and there's political assassinations in America. If they'd gone out and met this generation, they could have found out from them, like they could have found out, say, the stuff that I'm writing. The truth has always been there, but it took this man to support a crook 20 years and finally admit publicly he was wrong.
I suspect there's a connection between the kidnapping of Patty Hearst and that editorial that is not too difficult to see, because you see, in trying to arrange for the distribution of the food, it seems that Randy Hearst did finally contact the people from the women's
movement
and the people from the American Indian movement, and they attacked him viciously, but they taught him, because it was a personal experience and he couldn't run to the suburbs and get in his private plane and take off and everything. And I suspect that his attitude toward the impeachment may conceivably have some small connection with the Patty Hearst situation.
Of course, this was the uncle, her uncle, wasn't the father, wrote the article. But the thing is that if
it's a family, there's nothing like something on your plate within your own family.
Well, if I had my way, when the Watergate first broke, I would have taken the old vaudeville hook and taken him off the stage and said, let's have another election and let's stand by those electronic voting machines. I think they're rigged. They were in other countries, like in Venezuela, who makes the machines and so forth. Let's find out what's going on. But on the other hand, we never would have had 56 impeachable charges because they would have hushed it all up. So,
and 26 volumes of absolutes.
That's right.
I've never seen anything so incriminating.
It's so great. And when once Gerald Ford gets his foot in that door,
and a bestseller.
Oh, this book will be sold for hundreds of years. This is going to go on and on. It'll be the bestseller. They sold 300.
I think your course is going to begin to appear on many campuses, too.
Well, I hope so.
I believe so.
Of course, we took tapes of each one of the lectures, and I hope it will. Well, now, first I thought
we really are out of time.
My hour. I'm really off today. I can't keep track of the time, but that's okay. They'll let us do that, right?
Okay, congratulations, darling.
Thanks for coming, and you come again, okay?
Okay, thank you.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for over 10 years has been researching the facts behind the political assassinations in this country so that the truth may be revealed. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California.